Lovely. Okay. Oral history recording at Westminster School on the 16th of April 2014 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist.
Harriet Costello, archives assistant.
And
I'm Michael Barron.
Thank you. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your parents and your childhood before you came to Westminster School.
Yes. My father was a solicitor and my mother was a doctor. And their parents were all immigrants from Lithuania and Poland, so I was of the first generation who went to public school.
Mm.
They went to state schools.
Yes. And your brother was slightly older than you
my
came
brother
to
was
Westminster
two, yeah,
first?
My brother was 2.5 years older, and he came to Westminster in September 1939, to Lancing, in fact, as it happened.
Did you go directly to Lancing? He didn't start off at Dean's Yard and was
they
a
went directly to Lancing,
yes.
So fortunately didn't have to wear a top hat and tails. And
do you know why your parents decided to send you to Westminster?
I've no idea. we were living in London.
Hmm.
No, I know. I no doubt I'm about to sort of make some snide sociological comment, you know, upward mobility, you know, and you arrive and your grandparents are immigrants and you become a lawyer and you want to get on in the world and you send your children to private school, so public school. So, there we are. So I think it was either a toss-up in Westminster and St Paul's and University College School. So why Westminster was chosen, I have no idea.
Did you go to a prep school
beforehand?
Yes, I
did. I did.
Which prep school did you go to?
It's a rather notorious prep school now. It's called Caldecott School in Farnham Common. Notorious because one of the boys I was at school with was several months ago convicted of sexual abuse of kids when he was headmaster at school. But it was Caldecott School. And they didn't send anyone to Westminster. I think I was almost the only one of my lot who came here. They all went to the Lees or something else like that.
What were your first impressions of Westminster School? Where did you join? Did you come?
I joined in September 1942 at Ferny Bank, Grants. But I'd had a little tip 4 days before because somehow or other I managed, along with my brother, to go on to go and stay with the housemaster, Murray Rust, who had boys staying there who did farm work for a fortnight. So I had a little, slightly privileged. So, but basically it was September 1942 at Ferny Bank. Yeah.
And was it as you were expecting, or were there any surprises?
Well, I knew I had a brother, and he was already there, so it was roughly what I expected. Fairly informal, easy, you know, short trousers, and all that. Bicycles.
What was the day-to-day routine like?
Day-to-day routine, as far as I remember, this is tricky. I think there were two full days of school every week, or two or three. Well, either you could cycle from Ferny Bank to Whitbourne, as one lot, or Buckingham Hill, the other lot. Either way. And some days there was a coach, I can't remember what. I think there were two full days, and there were other sort of half days, because all these houses were very involved in looking after themselves and doing gardening and raising chickens and God knows what else. And then there would get the sort of game. There was no football because there were no level fields in Herefordshire. So I think the sport was really running or cross-country running and so on. So I have a very vague memory. I don't think school, it wasn't five full days a week, certainly.
And you were doing things to help the war effort?
Yes, we were. Gardening. Ferny Bank was growing vegetables, gardening. I think there were chickens. There may well have been pigs, and so on. And my evening task was going around the whole house and putting out the blackout.
Mm.
Everyone had these jobs, different ones, in the evening.
Academically, what subjects did you enjoy while you were there?
Oh, English and history, I think. And I hated maths. But English and history, and maybe I enjoyed Latin, I can't remember.
Do any teachers really stand out clearly in your memory?
Yes, because there was a war on, there were a number of teachers who were conscientious objectors. Mm. So one, there was one called Snelling, who hadn't taught English. Hold on, I can't remember all their names. And then I remember him. But I think when, and influential on lots of boys, I suspect, was the history master, whose name was Monk, Winston Monk. I think he was a New Zealander, who much later got killed in an air crash. And he'd been at Oxford. He was also a conscientious objector. And when I reached the History 6, maybe it was down here, he introduced us to Toynbee's study of history and Auden and Eliot and, I don't know, all those things, half which we didn't understand at all. So I'd say he was very influential on a whole lot of boys, the pseudo-intellectuals he created in the History 6 and History 7. So I remember him in particular. There were a lot of eccentric people because these old chaps got dragged out of retirement. There was Troutbeck, who taught Latin. There was some called Bonhoat, who taught French. Hold on. There was Laurie Bird, who taught biology and science. I remember some of those names, and no doubt there were others. And of course, the headmaster, Christie, he had this excellent practice of taking one class himself, so he knew every boy in the school by name. So he would turn up and we'd have some absolutely marvellous class in Latin from Christie.
Did he always teach Latin when he...
He taught Latin, I think, yes, that was his thing. And I think some strange man who taught divinity, I can't remember his name. Maths was Murray Rust. Then it gets a bit vague. Maybe there were other ones. I can't believe it's one of the main ones.
Was Murray Rust a good housemaster?
He was a good housemaster. He was strange. He was a strange man in many ways, quite sort of shy and tortured. He was, I would say, he was a good housemaster. Whether he liked me or not, I don't know. He always wondered, Murray Rust, why I wasn't like my brother. My brother was incredibly efficient. My brother was a sergeant in the Air Training Corps, a sergeant in the Home Guard. He did all the jobs, he ran the air, he did everything. And I was very inefficient and very clumsy and all that. So there we are. So we were quite different. So I think he really preferred my brother to be able to wonder why I wasn't like him.
Did Grant's house have quite a clear identity compared with... You know, did you see yourself as distinct from...
Oh, definitely. Firstly, because we were in this house on our own called Ferny Bank, which was quite isolated from college and Rigo's, which I think in Whitbourne, and Busby's and Ashburn, who were at Buchan Hill. So we were quite isolated. So I think we had a very clear identity of who we were.
And how was that different to the other houses? What was Grant special for?
Maybe we were more self-sufficient. We were more out in the country than the other places, right out in the countryside. So I think we were more self-sufficient, less urban, I think. So we had to make our own entertainment, weekends, whatever it might be.
What sort of things did you do?
I remember at Ferny Bank there was a large pond, and this was the scene of people used to make up warships and things. This was the scene of various major naval encounters, bottle ships, things like that, and people digging and stuff. That's what one thing I remember about Ferny Bank. And of course, when later on Ferny Bank closed, and we all moved to Buchan Hill. So that was one thing I remember about this. Oh, and the jobs and the gardening and the animals and riding one's bike, you were quite free. There were no limits. You could ride to Worcester or Hereford, wherever you wanted to go at the weekend. And people did. I rode several times to Worcester, a few times to Hereford. So, everyone wore short trousers. It was lovely. It was very enjoyable. No team games either. Marvellous.
Would you say there was a stronger kind of school spirit during the evacuation?
Yeah, and I don't know if you heard it said or anyone said the same thing, but apparently during the evacuation period, And with this rather broken up education we had, travelling here and there for different things, I seem to remember someone saying that the results in school specifically for English were higher than average, whether people read more or whatever it was. So I would say, yeah, there was, I think it was quite a high standard. And you also have to remember that, as you will know, that the numbers of pupils at Westminster dropped considerably after Lancy. It got down and down. And I think there was a point where the governor's sort of closing the school.
Mm.
And I think when I went there, maybe there were only 150 boys in the school. So our parents were quite sort of dedicated, I guess, you know, because they took a risk and said, "Use this thing." No, I think the standard was quite high. Overall, I had a very good time. I enjoyed all my time at Westminster.
Were you concerned for your parents? Well, presumably, they stayed back in London.
Yeah, I was concerned because my mother was ill most of the war, and she was in different hospitals, and we never, and the house in London, we never went there because of Blitz and all that sort of stuff. So my brother and I, we were shuffled around various places during school holidays.
But
that's how I got to this farming thing before I actually went to Westminster, because it fitted in with me having, you know, what do we do with this chap? You know, so. So yes, well, I was concerned. Mm. Yeah.
Was it? I mean, with helping with the war effort, was it a sense of duty, or did you end up enjoying the things and, you know, the activities in their own right?
Oh, I enjoy them in their own right. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And were you conscious of it being a very different lifestyle in the countryside than you would?
Very different
lifestyle in the countryside.
Oh yes, very relaxed. I mean, you know, all the boys wore shorts, no school uniforms. Some of the masters wore shorts as well. It was very, very relaxed. Yeah.
So how was it returning to Dean's Yard? Well, you started
to put clothes on, of course, in a sense. Yes, quite different. Quite different. Having to wear a suit, I think, and go on the, because I was a weekly boarder and go on the underground to Westminster. And then, what I remember about Grants, maybe it's still the same, in the, towards the rear of Grants, there is, or was, a dining room, which has a long mantelpiece along the right-hand side of the room. And it was one of these curious public school rules that every new boy had to walk along the mantelpiece, which is only about this wide. No one in the house had ever done this, so this marvellous evening where everyone had to walk along the mantelpiece, you know, just to establish this continuity. So it was very different. It was very different here, much more formal. And well, it's more of a school again. Then, you know, Vincent Square opened up, and I rowed. So then, the boathouse of Putney opened up, and all that. So that was Saturdays, I think, was rowing in all weathers. Yes, it was much more formal and organised.
Was there a sense?
And of course, London was here. You know, you could go out. No, there was some. I think there was some rule. You weren't meant to go further than Piccadilly Circus or Trafalgar, something like that. but London was here. You know, there was no restrictions. It was exciting, I think, for many, for all of us.
What was London like in that period, though?
Well, it was wartime London. Mm-hmm. It was coming back to life again.
Were you conscious of the school buildings being
Oh yes, conscious of that, yeah. And ruins and then bomb sites and so on.
Did you witness any of the rebuilding work that happened in Little Dean's Yard? Might have been a bit later than
all later, I think.
Yeah.
And it was all fairly rudimentary when we came back and reoccupied these buildings. So there was no roof on the school, so the morning services were in Westminster Abbey. One was conscious that we were, you know, coming back to something that had been damaged, and everything was trying to start again.
But was Grant's House still based in Grants?
Yes.
Even though,
isn't it still there now?
It is, but I believe at one point it did move out.
Did it?
In the 1950s,
did
I think,
it?
Just when they did some work on the,
oh, right,
on the house.
It was there, yes, it went back there. I was in a dormitory on the top floor, I think, remember.
Was there a sense of resuming school traditions? And you mentioned
the
mantelpiece.
Yes, the grey suits there and all that. And, yes. Yeah, certainly. and the pancake grease started again. And I think maybe the Latin play, I can't remember when that started again. Actually, I'd never seen one. But those things started again. And over in Ashburnham House, which during the war had been a club, I think,
yes,
English-speaking
right.
Union, and when they'd gone, they'd left this huge library of lovely, shiny books with dust jackets. So, I remember that. And that was a very civilised place. That's where the History 6th and History 7th were in Ashburnham. Incredibly sort of civilised, comfortable way. Little small classes, you know, six boys. You know, this is what I said to my friend last year. This is really a privileged education, you know, six or seven boys in class. So, that's what I remember about the buildings. So Ashburnham House was completely new, but it was a very, very civilised place, as it now is. You know, some of the chandeliers are still there. I think I remember when they were all put back, piece by piece. And, you know, then sports art, you know, there's Vincent Square, Grove Park, is that? Long ways to go there to play football, I think.
We sold the land. Sold
the land at Grove Park, that's right.
But Vincent Square, of course, is
still there. Yeah, still
there,
right.
What about things like food? Was there a noticeable change?
Probably for the worse, I should think. Because out in Herefordshire, the food was very good, you know, more local produce. I can't remember greatly about it for not being very impressed by it. But it was much better when we were evacuated.
Did you eat in Grant's?
Yes, I think we did.
Yes, you ate in house. Yeah. And were you aware, did you have a matron in Grants or not?
I can't remember. I knew certainly a matron at Ferneybank and certainly one at Buckingham Hill. I think there was a matron in Grants, I think so. And then I think, I can't remember when Murray Russ retired, then he was succeeded by a chap with a red beard who'd been in the Navy, Wilson. And he was there when I left. I guess they had wives, maybe they acted as a matron or housekeepers, whatever it was. Certainly Miss Murray Russ' wife, Marjorie Murray Russ, was quite a character. Wandering around, I think, doing housekeeping and prancing around, I seem to remember. I did in my poem, I wrote about all the boys lusting after her, you know, she was quite attractive. Yeah. And so on. Girls. I think of girls. Of course, when we were in Herefordshire, you know, there were girls, because people disappear off to Bromley and have girlfriends. And like that. I think it was so possible there, but out in the country it was different. So maybe people grew up a bit quicker there because of their freedom and so on.
Was there a lot of interaction with local people when you were out in Herefordshire?
Yeah, I'd say yes, and here I would say no.
You felt consciously more part of the community there.
Because the school bookshop was in Bromyard. I think it's still there, I think, under different... And they put on school plays in Bromyard. So I think a much more local context, and the people came up to the school and worked there, yeah. And farmers and local farmers and so on. Where I think one would do some work also now, I seem to remember.
Yeah.
And you were free. I think you were on your bike, you'd go anywhere.
Did any of these relationships continue after the school moved back to London?
I don't think so, no.
Do you think a new kind of Westminster School ethos, perhaps, came out of coming back, returning after the war?
I think it was a bit of a return, a bit of a backward look.
Really?
Well, like, you know, when I went up to Cambridge after I'd been in the army, all the May balls had started getting everyone dressed up in their tails, and I thought this is weird, but going backwards and doing, you know, forgetting the war and all that sort of thing, pretending it hadn't happened. So I think the sense of return here is something quite different and much more formal.
And I was going to ask you a couple of questions about John Christie as a headmaster.
Yeah.
I mean, you said that he made an effort to teach all of the boys and knew them all by name.
He did.
I've also heard he was quite a sort of striking preacher.
He was.
Do you remember that?
Very well.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that poetry minute. I also remember Christie in the church at Bromyard, one of his term addresses, saying, "Sex is a beautiful thing, is a great and beautiful thing." All I can remember. He may have probably believed that. Yes, he was a great preacher. Yes, he was a terrific preacher. Yeah, yeah. And good headmaster.
Mm.
Knowing every boy by name, knowing everything about them. Is it the same now? At the end of the school report, we have the housemaster's bit and then the headmaster's
bit.
We do.
Yeah. We do indeed.
And he would know something about every boy. Yeah. So I was very left-wing. I used to say I was a Marxist, and I remember one of his reports said... he was very glad. He much preferred boys who were communists at my age rather than conservatives, something like that.
And so when you came back to Westminster after the war had finished, you came back to London, and then you went to Cambridge.
Yes.
And you say, obviously, you felt that was, again, had moved backwards rather than forwards.
Well, they were trying to move backwards.
Yeah.
With difficulty, I think, because there were many... undergraduates there who'd actually been in the army or who actually served, you know, the older ones. So quite an age range was different. But I think when I think of May balls and getting dressed up in tails and all that, it was an attempt to go back to the past. And even though they're hellishly expensive now, aren't they, May balls?
Yes.
Oh, God, how could you afford that?
But there are a lot of your, well, there presumably were quite a few of your contemporaries at
Westminster. Yes, I was at Trinity, and it was very much a continuation of Westminster, because it was full of them. My tutor was at Westminster, and then one of the headmasters, Walter Hamilton, became master of Trinity. So, yeah, very, very much, yeah.
What did you do after Cambridge?
Well, I became a solicitor. As many people do, you know, full of, you know, there must be a huge number of Westminster solicitors and barristers and judges and the like.
Did you enjoy your career?
My father was a solicitor. I would say he loved the law, and I didn't so much as him. And I went in, I joined him because my brother had decided to stay in the Royal Air Force after his national service. So the lot fell on me to the family firm and all that, so I joined him. I stayed there.
Retrospectively, how do you feel about public schools? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you felt very left-wing at school.
Well, I'm ambivalent, because I had a marvellous time. You know, this was a privileged education. It was marvellous. I've learnt an awful lot. I was introduced to all sorts of things. But the fact that it's fee-paying and it's not available to everyone... And that marvellous education and small class size, you know, that's something I feel quite strongly about.
Mm.
And maybe it should change. It won't change, will it?
Mm.
It won't change.
Were you conscious of attempts to reform the education system in the 50s? And?
Oh, yes. I mean, even when I was at Westminster, you know, when I got there, there was fagging throughout the school, I think, but it was, I think, rather the discretion of the individual housemaster. So Murray Rust abolished fagging at Grants just at the time when I and my mates were monitors and we would have had fags. And I remember all of us going in a delegation to complain, you know, that we'd been cut out of this, we'd lost it all, you know, we were very upset about it. But that was, you know, fagging wasn't a hardship, cleaning someone's shoes.
Mm-hmm. Were you conscious of the sense of hierarchy within the house?
Oh, yes. Oh, very much. You know, these big boys at the top, and they were going off into the services, and they were the ones whose shoes you cleaned, you know, the monitors or head of house. And I think in Grants there was also some fallback situation. If one of these guys was to shout Mercury, all the small boys, we were to run, and the man who got there last got whatever horrible job it was.
And was discipline administered by older boys?
Yeah, I think that's what some sort of form of beating is.
Mm.
I think that's what got to Murray Rust in the end. He thought, quite right, that was wrong.
Mm.
That's quite wrong. So I don't... Was I ever beaten? No, my brother was beaten. He fell in bed with another boy, Harry Cleveland, I remember. With a slipper, I think. But by my time, it had gone. I didn't remember anyone being beaten by my old. He'd been abolished. It was that concession to reform and so on.
Mm.
So, you know, it all worked. You know, people were busy. They enjoyed themselves. They enjoyed their lessons, good teaching, so on.
Did your brothers and your experiences of Westminster School differ at all, kind of, in how you kind of remember it?
Did my...
Your brother and your memories and experiences of Westminster?
Yes, I mean, he went the first time they were evacuated to Lancing, and then they were to Exeter, and then to, say, experience all that.
Yeah.
So...
But did he enjoy it as you did?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yes. I think he liked the military bits the best, you know, the Home Guard and... So, that, for example, there were all those other activities, you know. Age 16, you could join the Home Guard. And Murray Rust, I think, was also, you know, was also ran the Corps, also in the Home Guard. So there was this, these things going on all the time. So I think he enjoyed himself. Right. I and another boy from Busby's called Jan Kellerman, now dead, we actually were the first boys in the school, we were so unmilitary, to fail some military exam called Certificate A, Part 1, I think, which everyone had to take it before. We were actually the first to fail it. But I remember.
So everybody had to take part in the
Junior Training Corps, the Air Training Corps, the Home Guard, I think.
Mm.
I think there were scouts, but they weren't. They were sort of... I think it rather petered out, scouts. I think it was compulsory to be either the Junior Training Corps or the Air Training Corps. So that was, you know, another extracurricular activity. I can't remember how much time we spent on that, but we obviously did. Running around in manoeuvres in our curious World War I uniform.
Really, it was a uniform.
With putties.
Uniform, yeah.
I began with, when I got there and joined the JTC, I think they had World War I uniforms, so breeches and putties. By the time we got back here, the war was over, I think they got into battle dress by that time.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you wanted to say that we haven't given you an opportunity?
No, I try to think of the war, the impact of the war on here. Of course, by September 1944, it was. Did we come back in September 1944? Yes, it was receding. I think the flying bombs. I think they'd reached Calais by then. The flying bombs had stopped. Mm. They were still coming into London in 1944. I think they were around. I don't think we worried very much about the war because, well, you know, D-Day had happened. It was. Or moving towards its close.
Do you remember D-Day and VE-Day?
Yes, yeah, I remember all those. Hmm. For a long time I had the newspaper for D-Day, it disappeared long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, great headlines about it. And VE-Day and VGS, I remember all those, and parties and that sort of thing. What was I going to say? Oh yes, well there was what I call the school services, particularly in the end of term in Bromyard in the church, the roll, what I call the goodbye Mr. Chips bit, you know, the roll call of the boys who'd been killed and so on at the end of each time, which all grew a little bit each time. And then people coming back in uniform to see the old school turning up and so on. So one knew that was going to happen if the war went on, as it did, in the Army or the Navy or the Air Force. What it did. Fortunately, by the time I got there, it was all over.
Mm. But there must have been a strong sense of fear.
Yes, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yes, next. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's why one did all this JTC stuff and AATC. I was in both. I went from the Junior Training Corps to the Air Training Corps, since I fancied that. And then I think the air was disbanded. We all pushed back into the junior training for some reason. Maybe there wasn't a master who wanted to run it or anything else like that. So I had my little bit of flying experience on that. And then it was back to battle dress and parades and mock manoeuvres and all that sort of business. And these military exams, the Certificate A parts 1 and 2.
Did you eventually pass?
I did pass. Second and part 2. Yeah. But I think intellectually is really, it would be the most formative thing when I think about intellectually, the History 6 and 7th. They were a bright lot, because in my History 7, everyone went to Oxford or Cambridge, you know. Mm. And nearly everyone got a scholarship or an exhibition. So I think this, you know, intellectual sounds was quite high. Mm. Though we were fed a lot of stuff that was slightly above us. Mm. W.H. Auden, T.S. Eliot, Arnold Toynbee, and holiday reading lists, all sorts of serious stuff. So I think, we are correctly called pseudo-intellectuals. And that was a time, I remember some of the older boys in the History 7th being rather overwhelmed. There was a book by Cyril Connolly called The Unquiet Grave that came out in 1944, and that was full of aphorisms about this, that, and the other, and quotations. And, it's an intellectual's handbook. So, there we are. But I'd say very formative intellectually. Mm. It was in the school bookshop at Bromyard that, having been, as it were, fed a diet of English poetry drawn from Palgrave's Golden Treasury, I still have my copy, I discovered T.S. Eliot. I pulled this book down out of the shelf and I thought, this is moment of revelation. This is marvellous. This is real poetry. So I put it on my, I bought it, put it on my book list and hoped my father wouldn't notice. He didn't notice, so I gradually built up a little collection of books, put them on and he paid for them, unknowingly. So, what else? No, I can't think of anything else, really. We did a few plays here. We had a drama society in Grants.
Mm.
And we put on a play, I remember, my last year, Ambrose Appleby's Adventure at St. Martin's School of Art. All male cast, I played a female. Yeah. I played the Russian adventuress, whose name was Anna Waleska. And I wore Mrs. Myra's fur coat, just to appear suitably exotic. And got kissed by the head by Andrew Davidson. It was all very funny. But that thing was very active. So those sort of activities, you know, and singing and concerts and music. I didn't mention, the music was good, it was very good. And the music teacher was called Arnold Forster, who was a Yorkshireman and a composer.
Mm.
And he also ran the Choral Society, I think, and we gave concerts in Worcester, etc. Do that. We all learned piano, and I tried to learn the violin, not very successfully. I think the music at the school was particularly good. And there was an orchestra, too. In Bromyard Church, I guess at the age of 14, was the first time I heard Bach with some boys playing the 5th Brandenburg Concerto. Mm. So there were lots of very talented musicians and lots of music.
Mm.
Well, still is there not?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good. We're ready.
We're ready.
I wrote this a few weeks ago because I go to a poetry course at Morley College, and one of the themes for the week was education. And I sat down and I thought, well, what can I write? Anyway, and this emerged. A classical education. It was the smell in corridors, the bygones of collegiate cooking, old cabbage, potato, cheese and sweat. Small boys who hated washing hands and missed their mums like hell. This was education, paid for. This was learning, where damp mornings started with prayers in Latin. The founder, 4 centuries before, decreed, and she must be obeyed, Oremus, and then Pater Noster. We learnt that patter quickly. The headmaster was John Christie, a J more like Jesus when he took a class, rebuked Smith or Jones for daring to respond, hoc magister, chortling, poor man. We laughed too, respectfully. After all, he was HM, knew our names, would add a note in term reports, told us in church that sex, yes, sex, was a great and beautiful thing, which we knew well, lusting after maids and Mrs. Murray Rust on Sundays. That way you don't forget the Latin, even though sex was deemed to disappear after long cross-country runs through heather, gorse, rain or dry, the Brixton Miles, Herefordshire once a week. We could still spot hexameters in verse, Greek or Latin. This was learning, paid for. Textbooks had owners, scrawled, smudged names, the recent dead in upschool litanies, the next goodbyes for us. Might it be over before Ari likes it, you're free to go? Free to go to war, where each noun has 4 letters, and future tenses can't explain nor Virgil instruct how the stripping down of guns, polish on boots, belts, brass buckles, leads to ending, gone, a ditch, elsewhere.
Thanks very much.